case this afternoon, number 23-1201, Colview Inc. versus Polycom Inc. Ms. Hunsaker. We hope your son is recovering.
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, I wanted to thank the court, thank Mr. Wecker, thank our respective clients for accommodating this change in schedule. According to the surgeon, the surgery went well. He's got 10 bone screws and a metal plate, but he's put back together. So thank you very much.
Before you start, Mr. Hunsaker, we have this combination of video and telephone audio, which is less than satisfactory. I just caution you, particularly when it comes time for your argument, that you need to be aware of the fact that when judges are asking questions, we may interrupt you, and sometimes it's difficult for you to tell whether that's happened, but just keep an eye out for it, and let's try to make it work. Okay, Ms. Hunsaker.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I'd like to focus on three issues today. Obvious to try, motivation to modify based on common sense, and non-infringement. On obviousness to try, the only claim limitation found non-obvious in view of the Yamazawa prior art is a support member that runs through the inside of a reflective pyramid. But this is only one of two possible ways for implementing the support member in Figure 1 of Yamazawa. It's either inside the inner volume of the pyramid or it is not. In these circumstances, Yamazawa renders the claim obvious to try as a matter of law under KSR and this court's application of that case. And the district court's grant of summary judgment of non-obvious should be reversed and summary judgment of obviousness entered for Polycom instead.
Ms. Hunsaker, did your expert explain why it is that when you're looking at the device of Yamazawa, you would instantly, as a skilled artisan, think of a contiguous support member pole running all the way the length from top to bottom of the device?
Yes, he did, Your Honor. At Appendix 2903 through 2905, which is paragraphs 80 through 87 of Mr. Keller's declaration submitted in support of Polycom's motion, he articulated five reasons that it would have been a matter of common sense to view the support member of Yamazawa as a continuous support member, including passing through the inner volume of the two pyramids that are disclosed.
So it's really not a common sense case. I mean, I know the words common sense were used, but our common sense cases don't involve situations where there's an expert identifying particular reasons to make the combination. So I think it's a little bit off point to regard it as a common sense case.
In the context of obvious to try, we don't rely on common sense in providing the motivation.
You're relying on your expert's testimony
to modify.
That there would be reasons to modify and combine the two.
We're relying on our expert's testimony to indicate why a matter of two finite choices would be obvious to try either one. Why those choices solve a design need or a market pressure to solve the problem and a finite number of identifiable, predictable solutions.
Whether or not it's obvious to try, there could still be a motivation to combine the two references, right, or to extend the reference.
That's right. There still could be a motivation to modify a single reference obviousness case here. Motivation to modify, which KSR says does not have to be based on an explicit motivation found in the prior art. And in this case, when we look at the motivation to modify, we're relying on common sense, we're relying on the knowledge of those of skill in the art, and we're relying on...
Why does common sense matter?
Because
motivation to modify is because you think there's some reason for an improvement.
Right. And so in the context of Mr. Keller's declaration at the appendix sites that I just mentioned, he described the design need. He described that camera cables would be able to be passed from top to bottom, and that this was something that he personally had done in the context of his own camera cluster device. That is at Appendix 2903.
Okay, I think we're just suggesting to you that this isn't really a common sense case. It's a case where there's a specific motivation in the expert testimony to refine the reference.
Whether called common sense or identifying the design needs and the finite number of possibilities and why a person of ordinary skill would have the knowledge to be able to pursue known options and to be able to expect anticipated success. These are the elements that Mr. Keller provides in his declaration his five reasons that he sets forth of why those would
why
be known
are
in the art.
Two possibilities?
Because the claim term at issue provides that there is a support member intersecting an inner volume of the pyramid-shaped element. The lower court construed that as requiring the support member to be on the inside of the pyramid. So the reason there's a finite number of choices, the reason there's only two, is because under that claim limitation in Yamazawa, it's either inside the pyramid or it's not. There can be different shapes or sizes or things that aren't relevant to the claims, but what's relevant for purposes of the finite number of choices under KSR and Perfect Web and Uber is that there's finite choices in how it can be implemented.
I suppose in this case, when you're using the finite number of choices language in KSR, it's really... seems to me it's more in the context of Yamazawa, specifically Yamazawa 1998, when we're looking at that photograph or we're looking at that diagram, particularly the photograph, and then your expert Kelly says, okay, I cannot see what's going on inside those individual pyramids, but I conclude it can only be one of two choices. Either there's these little individual support member pieces that don't go through the pyramids, or because they're all lined up in a column, they're all in the same vertical plane, they suggest the possibility of going straight down top to bottom as a continuous pole.
That's right.
And so in the context of this reference, that's why he's invoking this notion of a finite number of possibilities.
That's right.
Two.
That's right. From the image of Yamazawa, you can see the support member on the top, in the middle, and on the bottom. And what Mr. Keller says is that suggests to a person of ordinary skill that it could be a continuous support member that goes all the way.
It goes all the way through, right? Those are the two choices?
Those are the two choices. It's either on the inside of the pyramid or it's on the outside of the pyramid.
But even without obvious to try, you're still arguing obviousness, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
But to clarify, the judge below understood your obviousness challenge to be funneled through two specific theories. One theory being common sense and one being obvious to try. He didn't misunderstand the way you were presenting your challenge and organizing it. Is that correct?
He did not misunderstand the way we were presenting the argument. He just didn't apply the law as set forth in KSR with respect to obvious to try, and then with respect to common sense, which is really the motivation to modify this piece of prior art that shows three separate pieces but suggests...
Our precedent for common sense has some rules. Maybe those are rigid rules, but they sound like rules that we're bound by nonetheless, and invoking common sense for a missing limitation, we have certain demands, like it be very simple technology, or it's merely just repeating a set of steps that are already in the prior art reference itself.
Yeah, and I would say two responses to that, Your Honor. In this situation, the structural element of a support member is there. The question is simply whether it is going inside the inner volume of the pyramid, or not. So the structural element is depicted in Yamazawa on its face. As far as when common sense can be applied, we think that this is a perfect example of when common sense under the case law is applied.
Because it's really confusing because your expert called it common sense, but it's not common sense. He gave specific reasons to make the modification. I just think we're making the case confusing by talking about common sense. That's not what it's about.
What our expert was required to do, the evidence that we were required to submit when there's not an explicit motivation to combine found in the prior art, is we have to provide a reasoned explanation for why a person of skill would find...
And he gave the reasons.
And he gave the reasons.
Is there a reason to modify? You say, yes, there's some reasons to modify. Well, if there are reasons to modify, then it would have been common sense to do so. Right? Well, I think what the presiding judge is saying is your insistence on, like almost in common law pleading back in England, and shoving it into the common sense pigeonhole feels awkward because the rationale for shoving it in the common law, in the pigeonhole of common sense, is that there was a reason to modify, right?
Right.
So you understand what think of common law pleading, whether it's assumption, trespass on the case, trespass, whatever. Now, if it's just a question of why do you insist on this being analyzed as a common sense case? Now, was it fair to pitch the case to the district court judge as a common sense case when it's really a motivation to combine case?
I don't think we need to get hung up on the common sense. Whether it's labeled common sense, whether it's labeled providing reasons why a person of ordinary skill at the time of the invention would understand that these are two possible finite solutions, he sets forth those reasons. So,
can I ask a practical question?
Yes.
What happens if this court were to decide that the judge properly denied your summary judgment motion? But on the other hand, the judge erred in granting the summary judgment of motion on the other side.
We do believe that
Do we go to trial?
We do believe that we present...
What is the practical consequence? Say if we decide the judge erred in granting the summary judgment in favor of Fulvia.
Yes.
They correctly denied summary judgment. Yeah, the case can go to trial, isn't it?
That's right, unless the non-infringement argument prevails. But correct. If Your Honor decided that the court properly denied Polycom's motion, but should not have granted Fulvia's motion because the experts have presented enough evidence for there to be a tribal issue of fact.
In that case, you ought to be putting some time in to try to undercut the summary judgment in favor of your adversary. And aren't you arguing that it was error to grant summary judgment in favor of your adversary?
We are, Your Honor, yes.
That's what would save you a trial, at least?
Yes, Your Honor. We looked at the Perfect Web case. We looked at the Uber case. We believe that those facts were analogous, and in both of those cases, summary judgment of obviousness, or a judgment of obviousness was entered. If we have not persuaded Your Honors to that effect, we do believe that the grant of summary...
How could there not be a jury issue as to whether the motivations that your expert provided were sufficient to render it obvious? How is that not a jury issue?
We focused on the obvious to try portion of the argument with respect to the issue of law, because we believe that under the cases following KSR, that we have a finite number of solutions, a design need, a relatively simple technology, and evidence that is unrefuted by Fulvia that that there was knowledge in the field that people would have known that these were the two choices. It would have suggested from looking at the Yamazawa image. So our obviousness to try argument is where we have focused our legal argument based on the case law that we think is warrants a finding of obviousness as a matter of law. If, however, Your Honor is not persuaded of that, that does not mean that grant of summary judgment for Fulvia was proper, because as the non-moving party on that motion, Fulvia needed to come forward and show the absence of any genuine issue of material fact. We have expert testimony that the court did not credit at all. We have expert testimony contrary to what Dr. Nawlis submitted in his declarations that was not credited by the court in summary judgment.
I think the district court said something about your expert's declaration being unsupported with any evidence. It was just assertions, I think, is essentially what he concluded. Could you comment on that?
Well, the declaration was quite detailed. The declaration, number one, indicated that Mr. Keller had himself designed, before the priority date, a camera cluster device that was used to support members. So he has personal experience developing a system like this. So he is familiar with the state of the art at the time, the knowledge of persons of skill in the art at the time, and he sets that forth in his declaration. In addition
well,
to...
That's what he said. But the result of what happened was the district court judge is rejecting that declaration as having any weight at all, because otherwise he couldn't have granted the summary judgment under the standard, correct?
And we believe that was error, yes,
yeah,
Your Honor.
That's your burden here, ma'am, is to specifically explain why there was error in the district court judge rejecting the declaration that Judge Chin just pointed to.
We believe that it was error in not crediting Mr. Keller's declaration and instead drawing all inferences in favor of full view on their motion, which is the opposite of what the court should have done.
You also were concerned about having the wrong burden put in the wrong place, right? Didn't the district court judge say that you had to prove by clear and convincing evidence?
Correct. And when the
Isn't
court...
Isn't that the incorrect legal standard?
On our motion, at the summary judgment stage of obviousness, we would have to prove by clear and convincing evidence. In opposing full view's motion, our burden would be to show a tribal issue.
What burden did the judge put on you with respect to their motion?
All the court said with respect to their motion was that, as he had just described, we had not proven by clear and convincing evidence. So he did shift the burden back to us and didn't perform an analysis separately.
Isn't that the major no-no?
Certainly in the context of this part of the discussion, absolutely. That is the major no-no. If you look at the district
court... Well, you raise it as a major no-no in your blue brief. Your adversary in its red brief does not even address the issue. And then in your gray brief, you don't bother to say that by failing to have addressed the issue, they waived any defense to it. So I was a little lost about how seriously you felt about the error in assigning the wrong burden to you and on their summary judgment motion.
Your Honor, we think that the error of...
You say it's reversible error in your blue brief, correct?
Correct.
And the other side doesn't respond in its red brief, and you say nothing in your gray brief.
We do believe that the court erred in assigning the clear and convincing burden to us with respect to full views motion, rather than looking at our expert testimony, drawing inferences in favor of the non-moving party, and taking Mr. Keller's declaration as creating a tribal issue with respect to obviousness on full views motion.
I'd like to get to infringement. Before I do, I have one more question, and that's about the confusion between Yamazawa 1997 and Yamazawa 1998.
Yes.
Specifically, they both appear to show the same drawing, but one in 97 it's described as a cross-sectional view, and then in 98 it's described as a labeled as a front view.
Yes.
And I'm not sure how should we be thinking about it? Should we be thinking there's a delta in what these two versions of Yamazawa are disclosing, or are they necessarily disclosing the exact same thing? And if it is the exact same thing, what is it, a front view or a cross-section view?
So we believe that the issue is moot. What happened is Yamazawa 97 is in the case because Yamazawa 98 could be sworn behind. Now, the inventor did not swear behind it in practice, so the differences between 97 and 98 are moot for purposes of this appeal. 98 is less than a year before the filing date of the patent in suit, and 97 was not. 97 was a Japanese original version with an English translation that we believe was mistranslated with respect to the cross-section view. 98 is an original English language version, and it shows a front view, meaning that it's not a cross-section as the translation of 97 had indicated. Because Dr. Nala did not swear behind, that distinction becomes moot, because you can look at Yamazawa 98 and disregard Yamazawa 97 entirely.
Okay, let's turn to infringement.
Okay. So, it's undisputed that the limitation at issue for purposes of infringement, the plurality of image processing devices being secured to the support member. We think, based on the evidence that has been presented, that there is no genuine dispute that is not literally present. There's no dispute.
What do you mean, not literally present? Wait. No dispute?
When Dr. Nala submitted his declaration in opposition to infringement.
Why don't you deal with the decision that's adverse to you?
Okay.
The judge, you made a number of arguments at the hearing on summary judgment motion of infringement, non-infringement, as to reasons why. So, well, the accused structure has the circuit board perversion, it's providing some attaching function because it's the thing that the cameras are attached to, but it has other functions. And then you got into an argument with the judge and you said, well, if this had simply been a piece of structure with no software on it, if it were a bracket, it would constitute an attaching mechanism. But if it were circular, it wouldn't be a bracket.
It's not the shape.
No, let me just say, okay. It is a shape, because you've agreed that if it were a bracket attached to the member, that would qualify. But if it were simply, as it is, a circle, piece of rigid structure, assume it's got no software on it, and it's attached to the pole, it wouldn't. And bracket, all bracket means is, and generally refers to all projecting supports. So all my point is that you made these arguments, and then the judge wrote an opinion which said you offered no principle rationale to explain. This includes also the question whether there's another function being performed.
Right.
And you wrote a brief to us in which you don't have any principle reasons.
Your Honor, we believe the error on infringement is twofold. First, the construction of the term... The construction of the term... Yes.
Did you ask for claim construction?
We did. We submitted competing claim constructions to the court.
That go to the question of how rigid?
That go to the question of what the image processing devices must be secured to. Both parties agreed. So the language of the claim...
Now, the two proposed constructions that are in the summary judgment briefs, right, simply talk about the rigidity. It's going to be attached very securely.
It's what Polycom proposed was that the claim term...
Did you ask for a claim construction of what an attachment mechanism can be?
We asked for claim construction on what it means to have the image processing devices secured to
the
support
the
member.
What was the claim construction you proposed? And show us where.
The claim construction that was proposed.
You proposed, and show us where it is in the appendix.
Yes, sure. It's going to take me a minute to find the proposed claim constructions.
Your theory is that the circuit board and the chassis are not attachment pieces. And I'm trying to figure out whether that is reflected in the proposed claim construction.
Okay. So defendant's motion for summary judgment of non-infringement is at Appendix 3817. And it was in our motion for summary judgment of non-infringement that we set out what Polycom's proposed construction of the term was, and conversely, what Fullview's proposed.
Where did we see it? What page?
3817 is the beginning of the.
I think I found something at 3967, which shows both sides' proposed construction of security. I don't know if that's correct, but...
3967 includes both parties' proposed constructions. Polycom proposed construing the plurality of image processing devices being secured to the support member as the plurality of image processing devices are fixed or attached firmly to the support member so they cannot move. Fullview's proposed construction, on the other hand, removed the language to the support member, which is a structure provided in the claim itself, and just said fix or attach something firmly to another so that it cannot be moved. So the construction literally removed the structural elements of the claim, namely affixing...
What does that have to do with whether or not an attachment means that performs some function besides attaching is excluded?
Your Honor, I think that there is a spectrum of...
You understand what I'm trying to do?
Yes. If you have an attachment mechanism, you have fasteners,
Let me just understand what you're saying. You're saying, if I understand correctly, that the circuit board and the chassis and maybe some of the other things that intervene between the support member and the cameras are not attachment mechanisms, and therefore the support member is not secure to the cameras, or the cameras are not secure to the support member, correct?
That's right.
Okay. Where did you tell the judge that that was your position?
That is in the hearing transcript. It's also in the briefs. I can find the appendix sites for Your Honor, but we did have a specific discussion with the court about that during the hearing.
And the judge said, why does it make any difference? The judge specifically on the question of whether or not the apparatus that's used for attaching can perform a function in addition to attaching, the judge said, why does it make any difference? And what was your answer?
That,
remember?
Yes, that the claim term requiring that it be secured to the support member is focused on the attachment mechanisms.
Your answer was there's nothing in the patent that allows it. When the judge asked you, he said, well, why does it make any difference if it performs some other function? And
because,
you say, well, because there's no example in the patent. There's the only example in the patent is the spatial.
We use the example in the patent, which requires a belt, spacers.
I mean, that was your answer.
And
the judge on the summary judgment decision said you gave no principled reason, simply saying because the patent doesn't allow it isn't a principled reason.
No, but that wasn't what we said. What we said was that the image devices that are attached to the circuit board have a completely different function than a securing attachment, fastening mechanism. With the claim term being construed as secured to...
What you said first, when the judge asked you the question, why should it matter that the attachment mechanisms perform functions in addition to securing? And you said, well, that's a DOE question, remember? Your Honor, that would require the analysis of function rate result, he said. And then he said, no, I'm not in Dr. Collins. I'm still dealing with literal. He says, tell me, why does this make any difference?
The distinction...
And you said, no, there's no support in the spec for that kind of arrangement.
I will find the portion
of... Exactly what you said.
Yes, Your Honor. What the distinction that we draw through, the principal distinction that we drew, is between something that is a fastening mechanism, an attachment mechanism, as opposed to something that serves a completely different function.
But you have admitted to the judge that the circuit board also performs some attaching function that it won't work without.
It's attached to the chassis.
No, the camera is attached to it. The claim requires attaching the camera to the support network.
That's right. The claim requires...
And so the motherboard is performing some function of attaching the camera, because the camera is attached to the motherboard. All I'm saying is that you're trying to make the argument, I think, here that the motherboard performs no attaching function at all. And that's simply not correct. You never made that argument before.
It's not attached to the support member.
But the claim requires the attaching of the camera to the support
member. To the support member.
So the attachment mechanism has to do both pieces. The attachment mechanism has to attach
the camera to the support member. That's right.
The function of the motherboard, if you want to call it that, is to, in the accused device, is it's what attaches the cameras. It's what secures the cameras.
Well, it does more than that. And
of course it does, but the question is, does it matter that it does more?
It does matter. It does matter because it's not secured to the support member. It's secured to the circuit board, which is secured to the steel chassis, which...
Right, but you agreed with the district court judge that there could be intervening structure.
That's right. There could be. For example, the spacers in the patent specification...
Where does the patent limit the number or kind of intervening material you can have?
I believe it's a spectrum, Your Honor, and I believe that in this case, the accused product, which is not in dispute of how it's constructed at all, in this case, we are on the other end of the spectrum.
I'm trying to understand. The district court judge clearly understood all these arguments at the hearing, and the district court judge could have backed you into a corner. He said, for example, well, what happens if you strip off all the software and you just have a round plate? Right?
Yes.
You said, oh, no, that would still infringe.
No, that wouldn't infringe.
And then he said, well, what happens if it's just a bracket, a different kind of structure? So that would be fine.
We believe that if the intervening structure is a mounting mechanism, a connector, some sort of fastening mechanism, something that is designed to secure the cameras to the support post, that can have an intervening structure. If a bracket includes part of its frame that's in between, if there's spacers and so forth. So
the concern I have is that even though you acknowledge that the camera doesn't have to be directly physically contacting the support member, and that there can be some kind of intervening attachment mechanism, you appear to be arguing for a very specific kind of attachment mechanism, kind of like a pre-existing traditional attachment mechanism, and there's no room allowed for a more creative design of an attachment mechanism where some of the components of that attachment mechanism are doing some form of double duty. Maybe they have not only are participating in the attachment, but they're also doing some other function. And that's the way I understand what you're arguing to us and what you argued below. And on that score, it's not clear to me why this functional language of being secured to necessarily requires a specific type of attachment mechanism, i.e., an attachment mechanism that performs no other function other than mere attachment.
I don't believe that the line has to be that it performs no other function. But I do believe that the structure...
Wait. You mean it's going to be okay if it performs another function?
It could be, yes.
But it's got to perform an attachment.
If the primary function is an attachment mechanism.
So you're backing away now from the argument you made below and the argument you made in your brief.
Your Honor, I believe that it's a spectrum. I think that there are clear attachment mechanisms where you definitely will have the image processing devices secured to the support member, and then I think you will have complex mechanical configurations in which there is too much intervening structure.
I'll give you the hypothetical that I think you would agree with, but I would say you're not giving a rational reason why. Let's assume that you're going to connect the cameras to the support means by a form of a bolt. Okay? And you say, well, that qualifies as a structure, right? A bolt, ordinary things, puts things together. And let's assume it's a smart bolt. And the bolt has in it some software. And the bolt can read whether or not it's tightly fixed. That's all the software does. Reads that it's tightly fixed. You would agree that that would be sufficient structure, right? It's a bolt. It has another function.
Yes.
It has another function, but the function is related to tying it together, right?
Yes.
So you say that's fine. Now, guess what? I have a different version of the bolt, and the difference of bolts puts additional software into the bolt, which not only decides whether or not the bolt is tightly fixed, but it also decides whether or not the whole system is functioning properly, which is what the motherboard does. Right?
Yes.
And you would tell me that structure does not qualify, right?
I believe that is still a mechanism for affixing and securing the image processing device to the support member.
Well, wait, if it is, then it's just a difference because it's a bolt instead of a disc. In order for you to win your theory, you'd have to tell me my second iteration falls outside the scope because there's too many extra functions.
Your theory is the attachment mechanism. There has to be an attachment mechanism, and a circuit board is not an attachment mechanism, right?
A circuit board is not an attachment mechanism. And if you look...
Because
of what the circuit board is designed to do. So in Mr. Keller's declaration at Appendix 3947 through 3948, and paragraph 69 through 74. He describes what the circuit board is intended to do. It routes image data to the FPGA. It synchronizes those images on an image board. It facilitates distributing power.
We know all that, but the question is whether or not it performs any attaching function at all, and you agree it does.
It is attached to...
That's what allows the camera to be attached to the system.
It is attached to a steel chassis,
right.
Which is...
In turn, is attached to the support member with a bolt that screws it up tight.
That's right. But in the language of the claim is not merely that it be attached to...
Let's pause here and hear from Mr. Wecker.
Okay.
We'll give you a couple of minutes.
Okay.
Mr. Wecker, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, let's start out with the infringement question. Let me ask you this. Suppose we're talking about the human body. Would you say that as a matter of plain and ordinary meaning that my eye is attached, is secured to my foot? No, right?
Right. That is correct.
Okay.
The important point about secured to, as agreed by the parties and found by the judge, is whether the parts relative to each other are movable. And if in this infringed device, the camera, the support member, and the reflective surfaces are all secured to each other.
Okay, but that can't be sufficient because... I mean, all you'd be saying then is if these two items are part of the same overall structure, no matter what's intervening between the two of them, one is the support member is secure to the cameras. That can't be true, right? It can't be just because they're part of the same overall structure.
No, I agree that you have to do the analysis that you were discussing with counsel about which items attach to each other, but there are two important qualifications to that Polycom conceded during the proceedings below. One is that there doesn't need to be direct contact between the items that are serving as the attaching items. And secondly, that the attaching function is not necessarily the sole purpose of the item. And with those two, the circuit board is clearly an attaching item that secures the cameras to the support network.
I'm just not understanding how you're distinguishing that from a situation in which the two are set far apart but are secured to the same overall structure, which is a matter of plain and ordinary meaning. It's hard to see that something that's at one end of the structure and one thing that's at the other end of the structure are secured together by the intervening structure. That's the problem. As a matter of plain and ordinary meaning, you don't think of one secured to the other under those circumstances, and I think you agree that that's the case.
I agree that the issue is when you get to a complex structure, if there are enough intervening attachments, that the language of this claim cannot be extended to the entire device. Say there are particular purposes here, all of which are related to this invention. And for example, whether a circuit board can be considered an attachment or not, I think it's important to understand that the court below also ruled on the basis of the doctrine of equivalence that they claim that there was infringement. And using a circuit board that has other functions in addition to the attaching function is the same way to achieve securing as using a bolt or another attachment mechanism.
Okay, unless my colleagues have further questions about this, let's turn to the invalidity question. I mean, isn't it the case that the district judge was confused about the standard for invalidity and seeming to require some disclosure that the particular piece of prior art is recognized as needing improvement?
I do not believe that he was suggesting that the prior art itself has to provide the motivation. He was merely requiring an evidentiary basis for the expert to explain why there was a known need for a modification, and that the result would be predictably successful. In this case, as I understand appellant's argument, is that they're asserting that having a continuous support member is a matter as simple as repetition, which only comes from the specific Yamazawa figure where In fact, what Yamazawa had was a stereo imaging device. In the normal case and in the accused device, many examples in the patent, there is only a single pyramid reflective element, and so there's no repetition. This is not like perfect web or BE aerospace.
Mr. Wecker, yes. We also, for common sense, have relied on the notion that if it's really simple technology, then that could also lend itself to a common sense modification. And then what do you say about the idea that just extending those individual structural pieces into a single pole would just be a simple technological modification? It's just a mechanical thing that one could do, and the individual pieces are already lined up in a column-like position with each other.
The simplicity of that is not what one skilled in the art would see on reviewing the prior art. Prior art, for example, if you consider the reasons to modify as rigidity and the other things that Polycom's expert talked about, those issues were never an issue with respect to this type of device. iWorks, which was the Disney-designed omnidirectional camera, 30 years before the patent, had not required a continuous support member intersecting an inner volume of the pyramid-shaped element. It's just simply not a problem, as the district court found, to need that type of modification. And indeed, Dr. Keller, the Polycom expert, conceded that there are other considerations, such as portability, that would suggest that you would not want such a structure.
But why doesn't this at least raise a tribal issue? I mean, their expert gave reasons why you would extend this support member throughout the structure. And that may be credible or may not be credible, but there's an affidavit there. What's wrong with the affidavit?
Well, the affidavit was conclusory in this, and according to the authority that this court has created for single reference obviousness challenges, it has the three caveats, which in addition to simple, it is not used to supply missing limitations. And this limitation about intersecting the inner volume is the inventive aspect of this patent. It's not peripheral, it is central.
What case says that in a single reference obviousness determination, you can't supply a missing claim limitation? That's always happening when are you confusing the common sense cases with the single reference cases?
Single reference obviousness cases following Arendi have the three caveats. I'm not saying that it's always the case that you couldn't use common sense to supply a missing limitation. Just that there are caveats to it, and the three relate to whether it's a missing limitation or just supplying motivation to combine. The second is the simplicity of the modification, and the third is whether there's reasoned support for it.
Suppose we disagree with you. On summary judgment, I'm making findings. But suppose we disagree with you that the declaration or affidavit is not conclusive. Is it sufficient then to raise a fact issue?
Well, we don't believe so because of the fact that the prior art is not interpretable as having a continuous support member, and thus, given that the patent is entitled to a presumption of validity.
Well, that's confusing. We're not talking about anticipation. We're assuming that the prior art doesn't disclose the continuous support member. That's the assumption as to why we're in the obviousness box rather than in the anticipation box. So assuming that the expert has given reasons, which we find are not conclusory, for extending it, for extending the support member, why doesn't that raise a tribal issue of fact?
Well, I guess I would still quibble with the concept that the expert could just supply reasons without some evidentiary basis. What the district court found was that there was no evidentiary basis to suggest that one skilled in the art would have known that there was a need for modifying any of the prior art, and that that's a requirement first set forth in KSR, that one must show that the motivation or the problem to be addressed was present and known to those skilled in the art. I'm not disputing the idea that if Your Honor is concluding or comes to the conclusion that the district court was in error for having found no material issues of disputed fact, that the remedy would be to reverse on that and send the parties to a trial.
Okay, anything further?
That discussion was with regard to the summary judgment that Polycom made that was denied, right? Have you talked at all about the summary judgment was granted in your favor and the challenge to it?
Well, I think these are really on the flip side of the coin. I don't think there really was a difference in the argument.
No, except for the possible error by the district court, sir, in putting a burden on your adversary to show by clear and convincing evidence that they could prevail on the summary judgment.
I don't believe that that's what the district court did. I think the district court understood that the substantive standard here, because this is an issued patent, is that invalidity must be shown by clear and convincing evidence. What the judge was doing on summary judgment was trying to determine if there were any material facts in dispute, and concluded that there were not. So I don't believe that the judge imposed some burden that wasn't warranted in this circumstance with respect to invalidity, where the patent is presumed to be valid.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Werker. Mr. Hunsiger, you've got 2 minutes here.
I'm sorry, 2 minutes, sir?
2 minutes.
I'll start with Yamasawa. It is Appendix 68 is the portion of the court's lower court's opinion not changing the burden of proof when he switched from analyzing our motion to analyzing Fullview's motion. So we do believe that the court committed error in assigning Polycom the burden of proof of clear and convincing evidence on Fullview's motion. As Your Honor alluded, there's at least an argument that declaration is not conclusory. Mr. Keller's declaration is at 2903 through 2906 of the appendix. It includes specific reasons why the motivation to modify is there. There are portions that are cited in our brief that were not in my copy of the appendix, Your Honor, and that's at Appendix 2889 through 2893, which provides additional support that Mr. Keller included in the record on the issue of obviousness. So I would like to submit that to the court after the hearing today. And unless there's any other questions on obviousness, I would go back to the non-infringement argument for a moment. With respect to non-infringement, we believe, as a matter of law, there is no literal infringement because the claim does not merely require that the image cameras be attached to something. The claim literally requires that the image processing devices be secured to the support member. And there is no factual dispute in this case that the image processing accused cameras in this case are not secured to the support member. The circuit board is not a fastening device. Is it connected to other pieces in the mechanical arrangement? Yes, it is. But the circuit board serves purposes completely separate and apart from fastening any of the pieces together. And the portions of Mr. Keller's declaration
But it's true that you did not argue that the circuit board didn't perform some fastening function.
The circuit board is fastened between the chassis and the cameras.
In order to attach the camera to the support member in the accused device, you need the circuit board.
The circuit board is what the cameras are attached to.
Yeah.
And the circuit board sits on top of it.
And the claim requires securing the camera
to the support member.
And it's permissible to do it through an intervening structure. You agree with that?
If there is a fastener and attachment mechanism that has an intervening structure, yes, we agree with that. If the cameras are being attached to is not a fastening mechanism at all.
Wasn't that a claim construction matter then to say that you can have an intervening structure which participates in the fastening, but it will be excluded from the scope of the claims if it has some character?
The way we presented the claim construction issue was that the fastening has to happen to the support member. And that is the part that the court's construction left out, and that's the part that Fullview's construction left out. It literally replaced the structural language of the claim.
You agree that that fastening to the support member can be accomplished through an intermediate structure.
And, Your Honor,
yes.
I believe that there can be an intervening structure, yes. I believe that
to connect to the support member.
I believe that certain fastening mechanisms themselves have structure.
That's what I'm trying to get at.
It's a mounting device.
It seems to me that in the context of this patent, you're saying that what can qualify as a fastening, as a member, a piece of the support assembly, is unique for this patent. You've agreed to the argument now that that intervening structure can perform some function other than fastening.
The question is, what is the intervening?
Yes. I'm trying to dice down what's left for an argument.
Yes.
In the light of the presiding judge comment that, you know, you wouldn't say if in this patent that the cameras were connected to the support member if it was a mile away and maybe there was a string, it wouldn't be sensible. But here the materials are all close together.
And if they had written claims that all that required
was... What I'm trying to say is shouldn't you have asked for a claim construction that specifically said that the particular structure, right, has to directly, you're saying it has from the side of going up against the support member, you're saying in essence it has to be direct.
We believe it has to be a fastening mechanism to begin with. And that the circuit board is not that. And that therefore you don't have literal...
You're saying the circuit board can never be a fastening member. Wouldn't that be a question of fact?
It could very well be a question of fact. Mm-hmm. We believe that because...
Should this go back for claim construction and a jury determination?
We believe that it is not exactly present as written in the claims and that therefore there is no literal infringement. And we believe under the doctrine of equivalence, the only evidence in the record on doctrine of equivalence is from Mr. Keller. And the Keller declaration regarding DOE is docket 195-4, paragraph 69 through 74, where he goes through why the circuit board performs in a substantially different way. Fullview submitted no evidence on doctrine of equivalence. Dr. Nola's declaration in support of their motion on infringement at docket 190-1 makes no mention of infringement under the doctrine of equivalence. His supplemental declaration at docket 198-2 makes no reference.
I'm not sure this is correct rebuttal, but Dr. Reynolds hasn't come up yet.
To the doc, okay. And
I think it was
mentioned. And the court's only analysis of doctrine of equivalence is the use of an intermediary structure between the camera and the support member does not substantially change the way cameras are secured.
But okay, I think we have your argument.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank both counsel and agents for their session.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.